I want to know everything there is to know about you.
Now I'm going to introduce me.
You must have spotted her by now. She's always there.
Don't I deserve love?
Somebody has to like me best.
Hello, and welcome to the podcast. I'm Michael.
And I am Scott.
And we are here, as usual, to talk about an actor who we just absolutely appreciate. I was about to say desire.
Well, it's also true in this case.
Well, mostly, yeah. No, I'm not quite sure. Anyway, we'll get into that. But we absolutely love, desire sometimes, appreciate, and we want more for in their career. Mm. And yeah, we're just going to reflect for a bit. I mean, I don't know, I'm using all these words. But who are we talking about, Scott?
We are talking about Harris Dickinson. Now, we are talking about Harris again as part of our sort of mini-series around what is, as we record, kind of Oscar time. And thinking about performers we expect to get nominations down the line.
For Oscars.
For Oscars.
Well, for everything, I guess. But to get an Oscar nomination, yeah, should be
that's
elsewhere.
The key here. And we're focusing on folks that
not a BAFTA. Sure, we'll be BAFTA nominated.
Exactly. You probably already are.
I might be. I can't keep up.
But with Harris, I feel this one is more of a thing that I really think is very likely. Like, I'm fairly convinced that a nomination is on the horizon. And in this case, quite specifically because of the potential of some films that are already on the slate for the next year.
Okay, so I actually don't think, out of the people we've done so far, but the reason is I think the Oscars in particular have a real shyness to young, attractive men. Having said that, he could, like, obviously we've had Paul Mescal recently for After Sun, Timothée Chalamet and Call Me By Your Name, but I think they're kind of specific examples, and I think Harris Dickinson is a bit more university, like, model-esque beautiful.
He is.
It's the only reason I believe Jamie Dornan's not been Oscar nominated. No, but I think there's a real thing, like, if you look at it, like, if he was a woman, they love a young, you know, beautiful, stereotypical kind of model-esque person. But that's my main reason. I do not disagree, because the films he has lined up and the work that he's doing and the quality of it, he's incredible.
Yeah, it's maybe worth touching on those now then, perhaps, rather than at the end. So he is set to star in Steve McQueen's upcoming Blitz, alongside others like Saoirse Ronan.
Who?
And
Kathy Burke. Kathy, here we go again. Burke. You just want to talk about Kathy Burke the whole time.
Whenever I can. But there is also...
And Stephen Graham.
And Stephen Graham.
Stephen Graham is someone I think that's...
Yeah.
Really, he could be an Oscar nominee from that film.
He's a good one. Okay. We were doing the wrong person. Right.
No, we're not.
Hey, welcome to the podcast. We're here to talk about Stephen Graham. I mean, anything Steve McQueen, I'm always very excited to see. I'm hoping this will be...
Oh, it's going to be amazing.
Great. Yeah, I hope so. But we also have... And I didn't know about this until I was looking at what he's got upcoming.
The Nicole film.
Yes.
Oh, God.
A film called Baby Girl, an erotic thriller. Opposite Nicole Kidman. It's also got Antonio Banderas in it. It's written, directed, or certainly directed by Helena Rain, I think is how you say her name, who was the director of Bodies, Bodies, Bodies. And just even the tag, the tagline for, not the tagline, but what the film is set to be about. Despite the risk and prejudices, a very successful CEO begins an illicit affair with her much younger intern.
Yeah, like, I'm imagining, like, an Unfaithful-esque sexy thriller, because it's an A24 film as well. So, you know, I'm already turned on. Oh, God.
Okay,
that was my glass of wine.
You were in your metal pants.
Exactly.
Your glass Snickers.
Or, like, a metal table. Boom. Okay, let's clean up this. Nothing like that just happened.
That was great. Very well timed. Thank you.
Oh, my God.
Oh, bringing things to
life. Oh, baby girl.
So, interesting. I like that we're not necessarily on the same page, but it's me bringing Harris to the table and I...
Fine.
Ooh, yeah.
That's not where I bring him.
Depends on your tastes. So I'm excited to talk about him. He's got some great films he's already worked in. He's brought some fascinating performances.
And a really, like, interesting mix of films,
yes,
too.
Yeah.
And filmmakers.
Yeah, totally. Should we then jump in?
Let's jump into Harris.
Let's jump on in. All right. So, Harris Dickinson was born on June 24th, 1996, hailing from Leytonstone in East London.
He's from Leytonstone.
Yes. and was brought up in... What is it called? Up very near sort of Walthamstow area. So yes, he's
a
from
London boy.
From that part of town. He discovered his passion for acting at a fairly young age. Attended the Forest School in Walthamstow. So yes, he was very much from around there. Participated in school productions. Developed his talent for performing. After completing his education, Dickinson set his sights on pursuing a career in acting. He says he almost opted for a career in the Royal Marines, but was persuaded to return to the theatre by an acting coach at the RAW Academy in London. I don't know where that is, but that's what it says here. He began by taking acting classes and participating in local theatre productions. Maybe there was something about his looks, perhaps, but talent caught the attention of casting directors and paved his way on in to the showbiz. In 2014, Dickinson made his professional acting debut with a guest appearance on the British TV series Some Girls, which would lay the groundwork for some future successes. But it was his breakout role in Eliza Hittman's Beach Rats in 2017 that really solidified that and propelled him into the very exciting space that he occupies now. So his portrayal of Frankie in that film, who was a conflicted teenager navigating his sexuality in a sort of relatively conservative environment, group of friends he's around. It's a challenging thing for him to deal with. We see him kind of scouring the internet late at night for hookups. We see him embark on some of those things, initially a bit trepidatious, and then kind of wading into things a little bit further. Conflicts in his kind of home life, family dynamics, relationships with friends and a potential female love interest. I saw this film when it came out and thought it was really terrific. And I think particularly him. I think I have some reservations around where the film ends up going as a sort of queer story, but I do think that he's great. And Eliza Hittman is obviously a very talented and exciting filmmaker, went on to do, gosh, what is the name of the one that is now? Because it's Rarely...
Never Rarely, Sometimes Always.
Never Rarely, Sometimes Always, which was really brilliant. So I think... is a filmmaker only getting more exciting. But yeah, in it, I just find him so electric in that film and is doing so much, and it's a very naturalistic performance, but I just think he gets it. And yeah, I seeing that film, I was like, wow, this guy's gonna go far.
Let me see your hand.
Why?
I can tell a lot by looking at your hand.
Like what? You already know the size of my dick. You read palms?
I can tell if you're really gay by looking at your hands.
I have a girlfriend.
Let me see your hand. Are you afraid to find out?
Yeah, I feel like kind of exactly the same as you, apart from when I first saw it, I did not like the film. But I loved him in it.
Okay.
I actually do have a bit of a problem with the film in how it represents queerness at that time. and I know this sounds really awful and sort of thing, if I heard someone on a podcast say it, I'd be like, what a dick. But she doesn't seem to have the experience nor like life experience to tell that story. Okay. And although she's very kind of open in conversation, I remember the time to be like, I'm all for having these conversations and, you know, what stories should be people should be telling and all this. But to have such a, like, kind of horrific but naturalistic everyday thing that does happen, like queer bashing, as a huge part of your story, and to bring it to the end and give it a climax, I think it's not great.
Okay.
So that's more my, I think it's a weak film because of that. And there's a better story to be told of the same sort of themes. But he's like, this, a lot of it is really good, and overall, like Harris Dickinson is just so amazing in it and magnetic, and yeah, the camera like holds on him so much.
Yeah.
And yeah, so it is a shame when it ends in like, okay, we're just going to ultimately focus on, you know, the negative tropes of queer stories, particularly closeted, shame-driven stories.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah,
it's not the worst example.
No.
But it's also a shame whenever it's like, oh, come on.
Yeah. No, I hear you, and I think that makes complete sense. It's, yeah, the film's stronger for him in it. I would have even potentially would have loved to have seen him getting nominated then, even though that would have been very, very unlikely, but just...
Oh, he deserves to be nominated.
Deserving of the thing. He did get the London Film Critics Award for Best Young British/Irish Performer, and was nominated for Gotham and Independent Spirit Awards as well. So definitely did give him a lot of attention, definitely set things in motion for him to become a much bigger star that we certainly see him as now. But yeah, I think he was just absolutely brilliant in Beach Rats. In 2017 as well, we also see him starring in an episode of the UK show Silent Witness. But following this kind of 2017 big moment for him, we see his career gaining momentum, landing more and more roles in film and TV. We see him in the 2018 series Trust, where he plays Jean-Paul Getty III, who is a member of the wealthy Getty family, embroiled in what was a very high-profile kidnapping case. We saw the same story, and I feel like it was the same year.
It came at the same time, yeah, because the whole Kevin Spacey was replaced by Christopher Plummer stuff.
Exactly, so that was Ridley Scott's All the Money in the World.
Did you watch Trust?
I haven't seen Trust. Have you seen it?
I don't know why I watched it at the time, but yes, I watched that, and I watched the other one. I don't know if I watched all of Trust. I mean, the son is kidnapped, so they don't... Yeah. They're not in it so often. I think I was obsessed with the idea of Hilary Swank and Michelle Williams playing the same part.
Yeah. It's the... And the boy in the other one is played by... What's his name? It's Charlie Plummer? The one from...
Is that Jim in it?
Yes. He plays it in the Ridley Scott film. And he's a very interesting performer too.
Yeah.
Can you remember how Harris was in this?
Fine.
Yeah.
I think this is an interesting... Like, and it might come across a few times. He... After Beach Rats, which gave him such like an opportunity to be so complex and kind of show variation in a role, he then is cast as kind of just a kind of like a void of a character in a lot of things. And I say this is not void, but he's just there and he's a presence and that's fine.
Mm.
But it's everything else around him. We'll come across a film where I think perhaps it was intentionally done, but I find it hilarious and I really enjoy both the film, but him in it in a weird way.
Oh, interesting. I wonder what that is. This same year, he stars in a film called Postcards from...
No, it's not that one. Okay, but he is. That film, which is fascinating.
Yeah, tell us about it.
So Postcards from London is the story of a young man arriving in London. I'm surprised it's not more Soho than London, Postcards from Soho. But it's kind of this, you know, he becomes... Harris Dickinson plays this part of this young man who arrives in Soho and is befriended by these gay men and just becomes part of the fabric of this Soho lifestyle. So he is, he wants to be a muse to an artist. he also has this ability, like this superpower, which is like if it's a Renaissance-esque paint, like he has this Renaissance-esque beauty.
Yeah.
And if it's recreated, is it what the... He like feels the pain of people if it's something that's true, if an artwork is real. Isn't that it? So that's his superpower. Yes. He can authenticate a piece of art. And sorry, it's not just a piece, it's not Renaissance art. That's what they keep trying to make him recreate himself because he's so beautiful. But yeah, he can just look at an art piece of art. And if it's real, he'll...
Falls over and bangs his head.
Yeah, he really hurts himself. And he's a void. Now that's going for a Derek Jarman sort of...
Mm-hmm.
Atmosphere, yes. While trying to be more contemporary, so I kind of I understand the casting and the style of performance there, because he is a void for the story to kind of mould around him.
Live myself on George Dyer, without a tragic ending, I hope.
Jim, where have you been all my life?
What I love about George is that, you know, he inspired some of the greatest art of the 20th century, but he could still mash it up at a pub with his mates on a Saturday night. Shame he was a manic depressive.
Living with Francis Bacon was no bed of roses, I can tell you that.
And all the performances are purposely stilted in that, I think.
They are very stilted. I found it confusing, but I was assuming this is intentional, because even he and what others are doing in it is sort of like art schooly, film schooly, like student-y production type. There's an amateur feel to the performances, but they're all doing it. So I was like, well, I guess it's intentional. And we've seen Harris do really naturalistic, amazing, completely immersed in the character performances. So this one was quite jarring, but a part of me was kind of admiring the ambition, even if it felt a little like that. And all the colours and the kind of compositions of it was having fun with it. Mm. But on the flip of that, I did find it all to be a little eye-rolly in terms of kind of what it was trying to communicate about art.
And about love and lust and young people. I think I've forgiven it a lot because I really like Derek Jarman's work. And it was trying to do something I'm not sure British film does in general, and it wasn't quite an homage as it was trying to do something new, but it doesn't really achieve any of it, so it's not a great movie. It is on the BFI player. You have to be a subscriber, I think, to watch it.
Yeah,
but,
you do. Yeah.
If you're subscribing, like, it's 90 minutes. It's grand, and if you fancy him, he's barely clothed the whole time. Yeah, it's an interesting one. It's an interesting one. Yeah. I will say, compared to like Derek Jarman and the sort of queer movies we might have been getting in the early 90s, it shies away really oddly from sexuality in a very explicit way. And I do find that a strange choice in a film about sex workers and about that style of painting. And so I don't know. I don't know. That's just like a side thing. But that really threw me, because I thought, like, what funding did you get that would not let you express yourself, and how has that suppressed not just this, like, the sexuality of the film, but the film in a more general way?
Yeah, there is a prudishness, considering it's about sex workers, word. You know, and even the cuts are so obvious, you know. It's sort of like, oh, we're setting you up with a profile to be like an escort, and it's like, now we need to see your dick, and in the way it sort of it draws out this moment, but cuts at a point where it's like, okay, this is, we can feel the kind of censorship or gazing eyes.
Exactly, because it's not inherent to the script to be hiding anything like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense. It does not make sense. So yes, but it's an interesting film, which I'm never, you know, it doesn't surprise me nobody will have heard of it.
Yes.
But that is not the film I was talking about. I think the film I'm talking about is coming up very soon.
Okay, cool. Well, we will keep going. So... this same year, we see him starting to rank up more credits in larger blockbustery type films. We have The Darkest Minds in 2018. We see him as Prince Philip in Maleficent, Mistress of Evil. Okay,
that's where he's literally a void, because he's like this dumb prince, the son of Michelle Pfeiffer, and I want to say, is it, no, Jeremy Irons? Is that him?
I can't even remember this film.
It's some like oldie British man. Or Donald Sutherland. I don't know. It's one of them. But she's wonderful. I mean, that is... Michelle Pfeiffer versus Angelina Jolie with Elle Fanning running around. But yeah, he's just kind of like a vacant, handsome prince.
Yeah.
Which is perfectly done if that's what they're aiming for.
Yeah.
But I can't tell if that or, you know, this kind of mediocre Disney movie.
5 years ago, I thought I lost you forever. I've decided to reclaim this day for us. I've loved you since the moment I met you and every day since. If love has a truth, here is mine. There is no magic nor curse that could ever tear me away from you, Aurora.
Yeah. It's, yeah, unusual considering where he's coming from, but I guess it also does make sense, especially at this point in his career, that they would be like, sure, he looks like a Disney prince. Grant,
let's have him. Yeah, the age, and yeah, you can tell all of that. And what's worse, he probably had to audition quite, like, more for that than many other things.
Yeah.
And it was just, does he look good beside things, you know, yeah. I don't know, something like that. Maybe Michelle had to sign him off.
We'll have him.
She should be in Baby Girl with him.
Oh, that would be interesting.
I think Michelle deserves... I would do her for this podcast because she should be a legendary status person.
Yeah. Do you not think she is?
She is, but not... She's not getting any roles. Mm. Like, she's still, well able to be working in whatever. Where's her films?
Yeah, no, agreed.
Anyway, sorry, that's...
Justice for the Pfeiffer.
Yeah. What does the world need? Another gay man screaming for some white privileged woman who's very happy with her life not working in film.
Yeah, back off, Michael.
She's mother.
Where were we? 2019. So on the flip of that, we see him in small British indies like County Lines, for which he received a BIFFA nomination. And then we have... Matthias and Maxime, so an Xavier Dolan movie, which I really loved this film, actually. When I saw it the first time, I was so taken with it and just swept up in it and thought it was wonderful. And he, in this movie, just has the most wonderful entrance to You Were Always On My Mind, the Pet Shop Boys version, as he's coming up an escalator and comes into shot listening to his Walkman. Yeah. And the way that song kind of begins and the grandeur and kind of chaos at the beginning of that song is just wonderful for this kind of complete dickhead client character he's portraying. But he does it so well.
I'm Matt.
The fuck?
I'm Matt. Sorry.
Yeah, okay.
I'm Matt.
I'm sorry, bro. I'm just kidding, man.
Oh, you...
Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to be a dick. Matt, right?
Yeah. Oh, no, it's funny.
No, it wasn't.
I totally forgot he was in it until you described him. But now I vividly remember him. Great film, yeah. Do you like Xavier Dolan?
Yeah, I love quite a few of his films. And I really loved this one a lot.
Mm.
I'm going to say this because I don't actually often get to meet celebrities, but I have met him, and I say this because he was so delightful, but I also saying it because I got to tell him that I loved his entrance in Matthias and Maxime.
Sorry, you've met Harris Dickinson?
Yeah.
I thought you were talking about Xavier Dolan.
No, I've met Harris Dickinson.
Oh my God, how wonderful.
Yeah, he was so sweet.
Is he very tall?
He is pretty tall, yeah.
And I love that, the question I have about him.
Oh, yeah. He was so sweet. It was so nice. But yes, I was like, we ended up talking about that film briefly. And I was like, oh gosh, your entrance in that film. So great. So, yeah,
Entrance is important.
It is. And he got a goodie. 2019 as well, we also see him voice acting in The Dark Crystal, Age of Resistance, which was a TV show reboot spin-off of The Dark Crystal. In 2021 we see Dickinson join the cast of The Kingsman, which is the prequel to the Kingsman film series. So this was a really high-profile one. It felt like he was playing a significant role in the film. I've not actually seen this one. And I will just say, because I really do not like the Kingsman films, that I decided to not watch this one. But I believe you have.
I saw this in the cinema because my boyfriend of the time was obsessed with the Kingsman films. I actually can't remember if I've seen any of the others. I think I must have. You know, the things you do when you're in love, it's a bit mad. But I don't remember. I seem to have blocked that part out. But I do remember going to the cinema to watch this one because Reese Evans as Rasputin was something. Ralph Fiennes, whom my ex also fancied, which is was strange in itself. Well, you know, at this time, back as an English patient, I mean, we all were there, but we've all moved on since then. I just remember being wild. Again, Harris Dickinson does not, like, he was probably in it quite often, but, you know, when you have Ralph Fiennes being this British huge actor, Reese Evans being this Russian evil man, and... like, is it Gemma Arterton, is it? There's, like, the whole thing that happens on a mountain. It's all very elaborate and fun. And do you know what? When you're in love and the person that's watching it loves it, it's hard not to enjoy it.
Well, fair enough. Do we remember much of him in it?
No, but he must have been in a lot because you're right. I did watch the trailer and I was like, yeah, you were in all these scenes. I just don't remember your character.
Fascinating. Yeah, because when those first trailers came out or casting announcements, I do remember being very excited for him that he was getting a very high profile project to work on, but maybe it didn't quite take off in the way did certainly, because they really did get a big audience.
Oh, they're big, yeah.
Very popular. Whereas this one felt far more muted when it came along, so... In 2021 as well, we see him in Femme, which was a short film that has now since been made into a feature film with a different cast, but Harris plays one of the leads in that, who is now played by George Mackay.
Who was also in the short.
Was he as well?
I'm pretty certain he's in the short. My memory might be bad.
Maybe he is. I don't think so.
Okay, lied. But I never said I'd tell the truth. We should do George Mackay on the episode too. On the podcast.
I'm really into him too.
Are you? I've met him in real life. Oh, he invited me to his birthday. Well, kind of. I was in a room and a lot of us were invited. so it wasn't me in particular.
You actually listened.
And I was just like, I don't know you.
You were in the bathroom at the time, no? When the invite went out to the rest of the room.
What does that mean?
No, it doesn't mean you weren't actually there.
No, I was there. I thought it was some sexual thing. I was like, are you saying George Mackay and me in a bathroom where I was invited to a birthday? What?
Anyway,
I didn't go to the birthday, so.
Okay, sad. Right, still in 2021, very interesting year this one. So he stars in Joanna Hogg's sequel to The Souvenir Part 2, and I mean, this I find to be such a fascinating film, and the fact that it got two parts is so fascinating. So we see the first film, The Souvenir, it's telling the story of a fairly turbulent relationship of a young filmmaker. In Part 2, we see her now making a film which is telling the story of sort of the scenes and the life that she led in what we saw in the first film. And Harris Dickinson is playing an actor who's playing the part of who Tom Burke played in the first film so amazingly well.
And he's a student as well, right?
Yes. And I mean, the film is fascinating. I love both of them. I think perhaps the first one's stronger, but the second one is more interesting and doing far more unusual things. And I just love that they exist together. I remember him being really fun in this because I think it is that he's not the right person to be playing the Tom Burke part, but that feels kind of like the point, and it is then going for the very classically beautiful man to be playing the lead, and it just sort of makes sense in that space. Even though when you see him wearing some of the costumes and things that we saw Tom Burke wearing in the first one, it is quite jarring, but I do love that it creates that kind of distance and space from what we saw in the first case and how it's being presented now. But so many kind of interesting smaller parts in that film for a variety of actors.
Oh my God, like Tilda Swinton, what's the name of the guy from The Favourite? He's amazing in it as well.
Yes, what is his name? Joe Alwyn?
Yeah, amazing. It's like these people, like he's so boring and bland in other things, but in this film, like truly sings.
Yeah.
I remember watching it and thinking like, being like, oh no, Harris Dickinson is a great actor. Like all the stuff that, you know, I've seen since Peach Rats hasn't been that impressive. But you are so good here. Yeah. I think about Tilda Swinton's performance as the mother in that quite often. Like when the daughter breaks the teacup or whatever the hell she breaks and has no interest in her. Harris Dickinson playing that part, and when they're like celebrating, when they're not shooting anymore, I think it's a film that's really chosen which moments to focus on really well for each of the characters to tell the overall story for both parts. And I think, yeah, that's why these supporting roles truly sing, as well as, you know, the lead actor is not a very talented actor. So, and they're really a vessel for the journey, like, and not in a boring way. I don't mean this as a slight, even though that all sounded like an insult. But they're not a trained actor. They're not very good at acting, but they're very good at playing this sort of part, this kind of one or two note thing, and letting like the world around them exist.
Yeah.
Is that a harsh read on the film?
No, I completely get what you're saying, because it is, I think, but I think there is something very naturalistic about that choice. You are talking about Honor Swinton, Tilda's daughter.
Nepo baby.
I think, but you're right, it works for that reason, because it is sort of very kind of, it feels like you're saying one, two, no. But it definitely works in the context of the
film. Because it's built around them. Yeah. It's not like, you know, that's my problem with the Andrew Scott character in All of Us Strangers. That's a character that isn't, but from the writer's perspective, fully formed. So then it kind of, the world around them doesn't make sense for them. Whereas I think The Souvenir is an amazing example of a character that is purposely not very rounded themselves, like in terms of their performance or whatever, because the world around them is informing their character. That makes no sense. Sounds like bullshit. It sounds like I've done a master's in film studies, which I have. And somehow get paid to do that shit. But yes, so I will just say it. But yes, Honors Swinton is still very good at it.
Great. But yeah, definitely recommend both The Souvenir films. 2022 now, we see him playing a young Richard Attenborough in See How They Run, which was sort of this almost kind of felt like it came from nowhere, caper, comedy, Agatha Christie-esque, mystery.
He's wonderful.
And like, he's so fun and very, we've not seen dashing. Him do this sort of thing before, but it's...
But dashing wonderful. In like old, you know, Brief Encounter-esque sort of like clip tone. Him and Saoirse Ronan.
Expect to stop, huh?
I say, a real life detective. Scotland Yard and everything. And you are.
This is Constable Stalker.
Yeah. I think it's wonderful because he is a small part in that film.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But yeah, that is a fun film that I would encourage people to see if they haven't seen it, because it was a nice surprise that year, I think. The same year, we have lots going on. So we also get him in Where the Crawdads Sing, which was a very, very popular novel and very popular film, certainly with audiences when it came out.
Including you.
Well, I have not seen Where the Crawdads Sing. You gave it a go, though, right?
I gave it a go. And I didn't make it to the end because I was tired. But I watched, actually, I thought I was only halfway through, but I watched a lot of it. And as people that are fans of the film will know, because I don't know if I have the book, he doesn't turn up till quite late on.
Oh.
And I saw him for quite a long time. I think it's, you know, if that's the sort of story you're into, like, so I'm only laughing because I'm trying to figure out how do you describe it, like a murder mystery, existentialist, light drama with a beautiful woman stuck in a swamp with beautiful men, then yeah.
Okay, look, I'm real sorry I came on like that. Yeah, I want to get to know you better, all right? I think you're gorgeous. I do. I think you're free as a dang gale and smart as a whip. But I won't do anything unless you want me to.
I mean, it's, I will say, and I guess this is revealing, because it is a mystery, and I still don't...
Nope.
It's been a week, and I have not... It's not even occurred to me to Google what the... what happened. But, Daisy Edgar Jones, is that your
yes.
one's name from... Who I think is totally miscast in normal people as an Irish woman, all that sort of stuff. But she's very charismatic in the lead, and the men are nice... And he's good, and again, when he arrives, he gives a sense of danger, which I guess is important for the role. See, it's very hard to analyse that when I've not seen it all. But I liked what I saw, but I, you know, it's not, I'm not the audience for it.
Okay, fair enough. Nice.
But it's a very, like, handsomely made, like, it's like The Notebook or something, do you know?
Okay, right.
But not in terms of tone, just, I mean, the aesthetic and the style and... Like, nobody believes Ryan Gosling lives in this house. But it's a film.
Got you, okay.
I'm talking nonsense still.
He's drunk. He's very wine
drunk
right now.
I have a master's in film, so I'll tell you, nobody will buy Ryan Gosling living in a house in the middle of nowhere with Joan Allen not wanting her daughter to marry him. I'll tell you that. No, I think The Departed is a fun film, and I love that it made so much money. It literally made like 5 times its budget.
Amazing. Well, good.
If I can do maths, which I don't think is true, it was $25 million, and it made like 130.
Good. Well, then yeah.
Yeah, there we go. I can't do maths.
Well done. Good maths. Maybe I'll. I'm intrigued, but I don't. I feel like I might not be the audience.
I'd love
for
to have seen it with like my sister because I think she really likes the book. I know she
okay.
does, and I think that would have been a great like Christmas film to watch.
What is it? Why do you think the book was so? Not that you've read the book, but if you can tell from the.
I've not read the book or seen half the film, but why do I think is it successful?
Well, I mean, is it just that it's what like young adult type. Mystery,
well, it's
romantic.
Like I guess it's all, it's like wistful. It is wistful. Like, I want to be a hot woman in a swamp where hot men want to hang out with me.
Fair.
And there's a murder. Sexy. Like, what more do you want from a story? I think it's pretty probably basic of why people would like it in a good way.
Yeah.
Do you know, like, why do I watch, I'm trying to think of like silly... romantic comedies and stuff. It's because I am a romantic and I want to like fulfill those fantasies. You know, if I wanted to be, you know, living alone an independent woman and still have hot men around me and have a sense of danger with murder, then this is a perfect film.
Well, great.
And it's a lovely cover. Like the I'm not joking.
Oh my god, you are drunk.
No, but I'm really not joking. It's important. I think the colours of that book are really nice and they keep it in the poster from the film.
Okay.
Like very soothing.
Nice.
Okay, well
I did lead you down this path.
My job is marketing. I'm just telling you, I think that's why it's successful.
There we go. No,
it's not because it's a good story.
Yeah. You're giving a very good take on things. So
Sally Field, a young Sally Field would be perfect in it.
Okay.
She would have won an Oscar.
Alright, let's move on, shall we? The same year we have another wildly successful film in Ruben Östlund's Triangle of Sadness. This was the winner of the Palme d'Or at Cannes. It ended up becoming a Best Picture nominee, Best Director nominee. It's one of these films that felt kind of unlikely that it would get all of the success, but understanding kind of the fun it's having and the satirical prodding and all of these things, people really, like a lot of people who I know cited it as like their favourite of the year, one of their favourites of the year, and really got behind this film and were super excited about this film.
And I know people that like would put it up as one of their favourite films of all time.
Yeah, there we go then. So it has done very well. It's about a fashion model couple played by Harris and the sadly now departed Cherubi Dean. And they are wonderful together in these sort of lead roles. They are this couple who go on a cruise for the super wealthy, basically, and this film split into three chapters. The first one is very much focused on them and getting to know them and the kind of toxic elements of their relationship and the kind of poisonous nature of kind of celebrity and...
But also, as well, it's that it is just about people in a relationship trying to find like an equilibrium to have their own status as well as a status between... Like, them trying... Like, the bill conversation of, like, who pays for things.
The thing is, I like to take you for dinner. I enjoy paying for you, but there comes a point where I do feel used.
Where I use you?
Well, I'm just referring to my feelings now, but sure, if we... No, just wait. If we go back the last week or so, then, yeah, maybe there is a point.
Are you being serious? I got you the shirt. I invited you for dinner. You're staying in my hotel.
Well, you got this shirt for free, and actually you didn't pay for dinner, so...
Yeah, but that's because my card didn't work. There is a cash machine in the lobby. I'll pay you back every last cent right this minute.
It's okay.
Carl always intended to pay you back. I just didn't realize that you wanted the money right now before going to bed.
So your intention was to pay me back?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
So why did you take the 50 euro bill?
And that is now that is a very heteronormative thing because I don't think I've ever had that specific thing. But would have similar conversations. But I don't think I remember coming out of the cinema, and this woman who must have been like in her 50s. She was there with her husband. And I was going to the bathroom and she's waiting, and she could see that I came out of the screen, and she said, "What did I think of the film?" And I was like, "It's a lot, isn't it?" And she said, "It's like, if you're single, stay single. Like, this is, it's so intense." And I didn't know if she's talking about the film or herself. I remember just being like, that's a lot to say. That's a lot to say after leaving a film like that. But I always thought she's referring to that opening, which then does carry through in their dynamics. Because it's a power dynamics film. That's what it's looking at. And about... people taking advantage, and it's about class, I guess, as well, but it really is about power.
Yeah.
And the first part, I think, is about gender, and then it's about money, and then it's about resources.
Yeah.
Because it's three parts, so they go on a cruise ship, and then some of the cruise ship people end up on an island.
Yes.
And yeah, it's an incredible film. I'm actually not like a huge fan of it in terms of, like, I don't think I'd be brought back to rewatch the whole thing. Like, I've read parts of the script and interested in elements of it, but as a whole, I'm not sure it's for me.
Yeah, I think it is too long. I think it lingers in the second chapter too long, even though that's the part where there's very big set pieces, memorable set pieces, gross out set pieces.
Yeah, but that is that's what it's distracted and we look at that too much.
Yeah, are a little bit drawn out. But the first and third chapters I do really like, and especially because of Dolly de Leon in the third part. God. But I would say I would have probably nominated Harris for this. I think he's cast and perfect the whole way through and understands who this person is and how to make them funny, but not like broad, but being authentic to what it might look like, but it is funny, and he handles it very well. Some of the beginning sequences in the film where we see him at casting calls, fascinating, and really great clips from it, those initial
and memes. Like, I keep seeing that, like, when they're like, do Calvin Klein, it's like, now do H&M or whatever, it's like low to high quality and all this, and smiling, not smiling.
Yeah.
And it is really, it's really smart. Like, it's a really smart movie.
Mm-hmm.
And the third act is where I'm obsessed with it so
that's where it is, really.
But he's amazing in each of these parts.
He is amazing.
That film should, but she should, Dolly should have been nominated for supporting actress, and then Harris for supporting actor.
Yeah, absolutely, it's so great. And I mean, Ruben Östlund, Force Majeure, I think is amazing. The Square is fascinating, also wins Palme d'Or. So he's a filmmaker who everyone is now going to be super excited to see what they bring next. Maybe working with some of these wonderful actors again would be a good thing.
That's true.
Cool. Triangle of Sadness. This same year, he was nominated for the E.E. Rising Star Award at the BAFTAs. So on their radar.
Which is wild.
What, because of you think of the timing? Why?
Yeah, because it happened so late.
But it so often does. Like, people like Kristen Stewart and stuff got that nomination really late at peculiar times, or won even at peculiar times.
It'd be like nominating Timothée Chalamet now.
Which I wouldn't put it past
him. It's like nominating me for it. No, no,
you'll get there.
Like the rising star. Well, do you know what? If Miriam Margolyes made another movie and they nominated her, is that allowed?
Yeah, why not? Perfect. Right, so 2023 now, we see him in a couple of very exciting films, actually. So the first of those is Scrapper, which he received a BIFFA nomination for.
Should have been BAFTA at least nominated for that. That's, I think it's bonkers, Scrapper not being more successful than it is anyway.
Yeah.
Sorry, Scrapper is a wonderful movie about this young girl in, is it in London? I think it must be set in,
yeah, yes.
Like in a council estate in London, and her mother has passed away. And she is living alone, pretending to social services she's living with a family member. Well, her dad, who is not present. And just having like a jolly life, but you know, even from the off you can see where, like, that's not sustainable for a child. You know, they're robbing bikes to make money. They're, you know, getting food in this ad hoc sort of way. And Harris arrives and she's like, it's a begrudging sort of thing of like, you know, he's saying, I'm here to look after you. I know your mum's dead. And the kid's like, fuck off. And it's a really special film because it follows then their relationship on the child's terms, I would say. But it is, like, obviously he's an adult, so he has a lot of authority. But I think the reason it's special is because it's through the eyes of this child. And although, of course, you have space, not just for Harris, there's other characters too, but for Harris to be able to be a fully-fledged character and to understand his hopes and dreams and wishes, it is a fairy tale-esque thing because it's a child's perspective. And it's really striking. Like, it's not like many other British dramas you will see. Like, I wouldn't call it a comedy, but it's not a drama. It's not After Sun. It's not Billy Elliot. It's not any of these sorts of things. East is East, blah, blah, blah. It is a really special movie. Mm-hmm. Because it's a fairy tale, but like a kitchen sink drama too.
Yeah.
Well, me and your mum used to play this game, yeah, where you like pick people having a conversation and you have it for them. That make up a little story for them. Now look at these toy birds. Wait, let's just assume they're a couple. I'll be the guy, you'll be the woman, yeah?
My God, this sandwich is bloody delightful.
Do you think it was only £10?
Well, £10 isn't much to me. Pocket change, darling.
Darling, we need to discuss and talk about your job.
What about my job?
There's not enough money for the class.
And I think it's a joy. Like, I saw that in the cinema and had such a wonderful time with it.
Yeah, it is gorgeous. It's so beautiful to look at. The feel of it, the tone it manages to capture, the performances, Lola Campbell as the young Georgie and Harris as the character of Jason, who's her dad. And the kind of timing at which he appears in it and how he appears is so fantastic. He literally, yeah. I think we see him in the background just climbing over a fence.
Like his bag is over the wall, yeah.
It's so
and they're like enjoying like their life.
Yeah. It's so full of joy.
But you know what, like something rewatching it for this, that really, like, Charlotte Regan, who wrote and directed it, is so special.
Yeah.
And she deserves all the funding and all the opportunities. But one of the first things they do together when they've come to some sort of terms is go to the laundrette to wash clothes, both his and hers. And she has been, since her mother's died, been wearing this West Ham jersey the whole time. And he says, take it off and wash it. And she says, that's my mom's or whatever. And he says, like, this is mine. Like, that's mine. And you realise how by his relationship with her mother and the love that they shared and the experience they shared, and also her, him being his daughter, she inherently has some of the traits and some of the personality and some of the, I guess, inbuilt sort of love for this character. And something about that moment made me like, wow, because you can tell it's like, shit, something that I'm holding very close to me, you do too. And it's such a well observed moment in this movie. Mm. Which is like, it could have taken a whole scene to just establish this one thing of like, no, these characters not only might understand each other, but they just have an inherent way of sharing a love. And I thought, no, it's really special. Because she obviously takes off the top to have it washed, because I imagine it does stink. If he's saying it stinks, and, you know, he doesn't seem the most, you know, caring for hygiene,
yeah,
it must be pretty wrong.
Yeah. Oh. I'm very excited to see what she as a director does next. And, yeah, I wish it did get more kind of notice, but it did certainly do well with a few, because he got the BIFFA nomination, yes, which I mentioned, and it certainly did get a good bit of notice, but it deserved even more love because it does feel really special and lovely in a way, yeah, that you don't see too often. So yeah, nice one, Scrapper. Also then this year we have Sean Durkin of Martha, Marcy, May, Marlene, The Nest, that director, we see his new film, The Iron Claw, which follows the famous Von Erich family of wrestlers. We have Zac Efron as Kevin, Jeremy Allen White as Kerry, and then Harris as David. They are the three of the brothers. We also have Maura Tierney as their mother, Holt McCallany as their father. And it sort of shows this quite remarkable story of what happened to this family in what is described as the kind of Von Erich curse, based on the kind of tragic series of events that unfolds in their lives and what kind of happens to them throughout this time of trying to make it big on the wrestling scene. Their legacy is certainly much bigger now, with some hindsight, and at the time it certainly was. They were in the kind of the world stage of the wrestling world. But I don't know, I was a bit kind of hesitant to go and see it, and I don't know why. I don't know if it was just I wasn't terribly inspired from the trailer or something, but I think it's a really, really good film. They're all very good in it. Zac Efron for me in this one actually slightly less so, and I normally do like Zac Efron, but something about that wasn't quite working. But I think Jeremy Allen White and Harris Dickinson are really great in this. Maura Tierney is fabulous, really? As the mum. She's really good. And quite a tricky person to be playing, and I think she does it so well. So yeah, I'd really recommend it. I think they are all doing a great job, and it surprised me. I found it really engaging. I went with it. It's surprising if you don't know the story. I think if you're familiar with the story, sure, you'll know kind of what the outcomes are. But it certainly surprised me, and I think Sean Durkin is also a very exciting filmmaker.
Oh my god, because what I loved a filmmaker.
The Nest, I thought was so terrific. Again, excited to see what he's going to do next. And again, this tying it back to Harris, he is working with some really exciting filmmakers who are sort of at the kind of, within their A game, but on that sort of rise, if they're not already there, and bringing out this really exciting work, which I'm super excited to see more of. But on that, that is then bringing us up to date. We have Blitz and Baby Girl to look forward to, and hopefully lots of other super exciting things. But is there something, I know you're not sure about him getting an Oscar, but maybe there's just something you'd like to see him do. Have you got any ideas of where you would like to see Harris?
Yeah, well, the reason I was struggling with the Oscar nomination is like, what roles would he do that have been recently Oscar nominated? That's where I was kind of going with that. And I think even if someone like him did a biopic and transformed, I don't think it would, have much traction. Weirdly, with like Iron Claw, I think maybe the awards thing started too late, but I just assumed it was like a mainstream-esque move. Not mainstream, but, you know, it was aiming for money-making. And then suddenly it was like, no, we're going for awards. Like, well, it's too late to get traction and whatnot.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. The thing that keeps jumping out to me, and this is maybe from See How We Run, but I would love to see him in a period-set film, like Brief Encounter-esque time of like repressed British society. Sadly, he's passed away now, but I would have loved him in a Terence Davies movie.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
Again, bringing him back to queer stuff. But I think there's something about him playing someone who is upper class and exploring that sort of nature would be good. And I know at the start of the episode talking about not wanting queer stories that are oppressed, but I would love to see a like 1920s British set story with an upper class man having a relationship with like a Morris or something.
Right. Okay.
Well, that's earlier, but I don't know, something like that. I don't know. Nice. I would love, but I can't think of a contemporary filmmaker that's like what are the name of the people that did the Ian Forster adaptations? Like Room with a View, that's so old. Merchant Ivory. No Merchant Ivory or no Terence Davies. I can't think of an equivalent of that that's English. So, it's a bit of a shame. But if Terence Davies could come back from the dead to make one last film, it would be with him playing some sort of repressed man. Yeah. The Celia Johnson part in a queer version of Brief Encounter.
There we go. Nice one. I think mine feels maybe more obvious in that thinking about what we see from him in the likes of A Beach Rat and Scrapper, and thinking about those female filmmakers at a certain point in their career. Charlotte Wells, who directed After Sun, I'm not sure what's coming next from her, also a queer filmmaker. I can imagine him working very well with her. Seeing the two different things we get from him in the likes of A Beach Rat and the warmth from something like Scrapper, and thinking about what Paul Mescal was bringing. It's not that I want a kind of repeat or duplicate of that, but I can just imagine him bringing a sort of British story of that nature and scale to life in a really beautiful way. And we got the traction for Paul Mescal in that film. Now, that is an incredibly special film, so that was a very deserved nomination. But yeah, I think I would just love to see them work together, or filmmakers like a Charlotte Wells, or he teams up with any of these wonderful women again and works with them.
Mm.
Again, there's so many possibilities, and I'm sure we're going to see lots of very exciting stuff. I'm sure he's going to continue to work with exciting, emerging, or at their peak filmmakers, and we'll get lots and lots to come. So yay, Harris, big fan.
Yeah. And I think it's exciting that he's not had like a big Marvel or any of those sorts of movies.
Yeah.
And obviously Disney. Although there's not another Maleficent, is there? So he might turn up in Maleficent 3 if that happened. Well,
maybe if they were to keep going, then sure.
For that, and why not? But yeah, no, I think he's a really exciting actor because of the choices he has been making.
Yeah, absolutely. And therefore, I hope he doesn't then suddenly turn up in a Marvel. I hope he does keep getting to make these.
Or just do everything. Choices. Yeah.
Well, sure.
I want to have houses in different countries.
Well,
I'm sorry. I'm sure people do Marvel for other reasons.
Well, but no, you make a good point. Why not? Anything that he can get, he deserves. Alrighty. So thank you all for joining us once again. It has been a pleasure talking about Harris, and talking about Harris with you, Michael.
And with you, Scott.
If people want to get in touch with us and tell us who they reckon is going to get Oscar nominated, or have anything else to share, where might they find us?
You can find us on social media at don'tknowher_pod, or you can email us at gmail. You can get us on Gmail at don'tknowherpod@gmail.com.
Wonderful.
And please do rate, review us. It really helps other people to find us. And yeah, share the love. Like, let people know what your Harris Dickinson favourite film is, and what you'd like to see him do. But yes, thank you all for listening, and thank you, Scott, for your really wonderful suggestion.
Oh, thank you so much. It has been my pleasure. Thank you for listening, everyone. Have a wonderful day. Goodbye.
Bye.